ಏವಾದ್ವಿಷಾಂ ನಿಗಮವರ್ತ್ಮನಿ ನಿಷ್ಠಿತಾನಾಂ ಪೂರ್ವೀರ್ಮಯೇನ ವಿಹಿತಾಭಿರದೃಶ್ಯತುರ್ಭಿಃ ಲೋಕಾಂ ನಿತ್ತಾಂ ಮತಿಮಿಮೋಹನತಿ ಪ್ರಲೋಭಂ ವೇಷಂ ವಿಧಾಯ ಬಹುಭಾಷ್ಯತ ಔಪಧರ್ಮ್ಯಾಂ ದೇವದ್ವಿಷಾಂ ಆಫ್ ದೋಸ್ ಹೂ ಆರ್ ಎನ್ವಿಯಸ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಲಾರ್ಡ್ ನಿಗಮ the Vedas, Vartamani, on the path of Nishthitanam, of the well-situated, Purbi, by rockets, Mayena, made by the great scientist Maya, Vihitabhi, made by Adishya Turbi, unseen in the sky, Lokan, the different planets, Natam, of the killers, Mati Vimoham, bewilderment of the mind, Ati Pralobham, very attractive, Vesham, dress, Vidhaya, having done so, Bahu Bhashyate, will talk very much, Aupadharmyam, sub-religious principles. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. When the atheists, after being well-versed in the Vedic scientific knowledge, annihilate inhabitants of different planets, flying unseen in the sky on well-built rockets prepared by the great scientist Maya, the Lord will bewilder their minds by dressing himself attractively as Buddha and will preach on sub-religious principles. Purport. This incarnation of Lord Buddha is not the same Buddha incarnation we have in the present history of mankind. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the Buddha incarnation mentioned in this verse appeared in a different Kali age. In the duration of life of one Manu, there are more than 72 Kali Yugas, and in one of them, the particular type of Buddha mentioned here would appear. Lord Buddha incarnates at a time when the people are most materialistic and preaches common sense religious principles. Such ahimsa is not a religious principle itself, but it is an important quality for persons who are actually religious. It is a common sense religion because one is advised to do no harm to any other animal or living being, because such harmful actions are equally harmful to he who does the harm. But before learning these principles of non-violence, one has to learn two other principles, namely to be humble and to be prideless. Unless one is humble and prideless, one cannot be harmless and non-violent. And after being non-violent, one has to learn tolerance and simplicity of living. One must offer respects to the great religious preachers and spiritual leaders and also train the senses for controlled action. Learning to be unattached to family and home and enacting devotional service to the Lord, etc. At the ultimate stage, one has to accept the Lord and become his devotee. Otherwise, there is no religion. In religious principles, there must be God in the center. Otherwise, simple moral instructions are merely sub-religious principles, generally known as upadharma, or nearness to the religious principles. Om Agyanati Mirandasya ಜ್ಞಾನಂಜನಶಲಾಕಯ ಚಕ್ಷುರುನ್ಮಿಲಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ ಶ್ರೀಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮನೋಭೀಷ್ಟಂ ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತಂ ಯೇನ ಭೂತಲೆ ಸ್ವಯಂ ರೂಪ ಕದಾ ಮಹ್ಯಂ ದದಾತಿ ಸ್ವಪದಾಂತಿಕಂ ಮುಖಂ ಕರೋತಿ ವಾಚಾಲಂ ಪಂಗುಂ ಲಂಘಯತೆ ಗಿರಿಂ ಯತ್ಕೃಪಾತಮಹಂ ವಂದೇ ಶ್ರೀಗುರು ದೀನತಾರಿಣಂ ವಾಂಚಾಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾಸಿಂಧೂಭ್ಯೈವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this chapter is entitled The Scheduled Incarnations of the Lord. And so far we have seen the narration about different incarnations that have already appeared or that are going to appear being narrated in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we saw many avatars like Vamana, Varaha, so many avatars, Narsimha, so many avatars we have been reading about, Parshuram, Ram. And in the previous verse, we read about the incarnation of Vyasadeva, how Krishna came as his literary incarnation to script all the Vedas and the Bhagavatam and the Upanishads and all that. And now in this verse, the Srimad Bhagavatam is predicting the avatar of Buddha. So when we read such verses where, you know, the incarnations of the Lord are mentioned, and especially incarnations of the Lord which haven't yet appeared are mentioned, it increases our faith in the scriptures. So Bhagavatam was actually spoken 5,000 years ago. We know the pastime of Bhagavatam, how it was spoken on the banks of the Yamuna, and it was a conversation between Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj. So this was 5,000 years ago that Bhagavatam was spoken by Sukadeva Goswami. And the Bhagavatam is predicting, Sukadeva Goswami is predicting that Buddha will appear. Buddha actually appeared 2,500 years after the Bhagavatam was spoken. So it was actually doing a forecast, like what will happen in the future, the Bhagavatam was telling. And actually it happened. Everything was predicted. Even in the first canto, third chapter, there is mention of different Leela avatars of the Lord. And there also the mention of Lord Buddha is there. So in which province he will appear, who will be his parents, everything is given by the Bhagavatam. And exactly that is what happened 2,500 years ago. So when we read about such things, it really helps us. It establishes conviction in our heart that Shastras are actually the ultimate guideline for devotees. So now in this verse, we are seeing that the incarnation of Buddha has come up. And as Prabhupada says in the purport, that this Buddha who is being mentioned over here is actually a different Buddha. This Buddha appeared in some other Kali Yuga during the life cycle of Manu. Because in our Kali Yuga, the Buddha who appeared, he appeared in the province of Gaya and he appeared for stopping animal killing. There was so much animal killing rampant when our Buddha, in this Kali Yuga, the Buddha appeared. But when this Buddha had appeared in some other Kali Yuga, the principle is the same. There was killing going on, but there was killing going on of other inhabitants of other planets. And it was being done by an atheist class of men who had become very powerful because of following Vedic rituals and because of doing mantra jap. They had become very powerful and they had obtained lots of arms and ammunition from the Maya Danav. And using all these things, they were killing inhabitants of various planets. So again, to trick these atheistic class of men away from killing, whether it's animals or killing of other jivas, Lord Buddha actually appeared. So the principle is the same, whether Lord Buddha appears in whichever Kali Yuga Lord Buddha appears, the principle or the philosophy which both Buddha appears to preach is the same, which is non-violence. Buddha appears because he has compassion in his heart when he sees such killing going on, and then he incarnates in this world. So as Jayadev, the famous poet Jayadev has sung, we know about the famous Dashavatar Stotra which the poet Jayadev has composed. So in the ninth avatar, he mentions, Nindasi yagna vidher ahaha shruti jatam, sadaya hridaye darshihi pashu ghatam, keshava drita buddha sharira jaya jagadisha hare. So he says, O Keshava, O Hari, O Lord of the universe, you who have assumed the form of Buddha, only out of your compassion, because you had such a compassionate heart and you saw the fallen condition of these jivas who were engaging in killing, and therefore you appeared out of compassion. And when you appear, you decry the slaughtering of poor animals performed according to Vedic rituals. So this is what poet Jayadev has sung. So the principle or the philosophy of the appearance of Buddha is the same. He comes because he sees rampant killing going on, and out of his compassion, he comes to stop that rampant killing going on. So Srila Prabhupada said in one conversation, he was having a conversation with an Indian man about the incarnation of Buddha, And there Srila Prabhupada was explaining to the man, because that man was asking, why did Buddha appear? And why did he preach this impersonal philosophy and about stopping the killing of animals? What was happening at that time? So Prabhupada explained to this person. He said that yes, animal killing was rampant, because of which Lord Buddha appeared. But he also explained that actually there is two types of animal killing. One is actually killing the animals, like going out and outright killing animals, like it happens in the slaughterhouses today. But the other type of animal killing is, Prabhupada says, that the soul is also referred to animal. And one who kills his own soul, that means one who has lost his identity as a spirit soul, that is also considered an animal killer. Because he does not know who he is. He does not know that he is not this body, but he is the spirit soul. He does not know he has to engage in activities for the soul, and not just for the satisfaction of the body. So when a person does not know this, he has lost this true knowledge, or he has lost his true identity, then such a person is also called as animal killer. And Lord Buddha appears to save both these types of animal killers. One who has lost his identity, and one who is also actually engaging in killing of animals. So always Lord sets an example when he appears. He shows by his own example whatever he has come to preach. Like we see in the case of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also. He came to preach the highest philosophy of love of Godhead through the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. But he himself set an example. He was living that in his life, continuously doing kirtan, continuously chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So in the same way, whatever philosophy Lord Buddha came to teach and whatever principles he came to enunciate in Kali Yuga, same principles Buddha was following in his life. He was setting the highest example for the people of Kali Yuga to follow. So today, in today's discussion, we will discuss something about the life of Buddha, and we will also discuss about the philosophy, his teachings, and what was the purpose why Buddha appeared in Kali Yuga. So we will talk something about the Buddha who appeared in our Kali Yuga, because we have more information about that Buddha. So this Buddha actually appeared 2500 years ago in the province of Gaya. And he was born in a wealthy family. He was actually born a prince. So he was born in a very wealthy kingdom. There was so much opulence. His father was the king of so many provinces, so many kingdoms around that part of Gaya. So when he appeared, his father was at the peak of his ruling, like of his kingship. And he appeared in such opulent circumstances. And when Buddha appeared, he was almost like a celestial being. Obviously, he is the Supreme Lord. So he had such beauty, such opulence, such nice bodily features that everyone was attracted in the kingdom to this child. And as soon as he appeared, obviously when, you know, fathers and mothers, they all call astrologers. In the olden days, especially, this was the tradition. So they immediately called some famous astrologers. And they requested the astrologers to do the calculations, astrological calculations for their son. And the astrologers, they invited many astrologers, and most of the astrologers had the same opinion. We see actually nowadays, if we go and consult astrologers, one astrologer will say one thing, and then you consult the other one, he will completely say the opposite thing. And there will be confusion in the mind as to which astrologer to follow. But in case of Buddha, almost all the astrologers gave the same verdict. They said that at a very young age, this child will renounce the world. He has not come here to enjoy this kingdom, but he has come here to play the role of a mendicant. So this child will give up all worldly pleasures. He will renounce the kingdom. He will renounce the world. In fact, he will put on the dress of a mendicant and he will go around with a begging bowl. So this was the prediction which these astrologers gave. And when the parents, especially when they are king and queen, when they heard this prediction, they were so shocked. So they decided that there must be something we can do to prevent this from happening. And little, you know, not realizing that actually it was destined to happen. So the father went to great extent to prevent this from happening in Buddha's life. He orchestrated his entire kingdom in such a way that Buddha would never see any misery in his life. And in childhood, Buddha's name was Siddhartha Gautam. So he arranged that Siddhartha would never see any misery. The whole kingdom he orchestrated such that the four major problems of life, birth, disease, old age and death, are not visible in the kingdom. He drove everything out. He created huge walls around that palace. All those palaces. In fact, Siddhartha had different palaces for different seasons. And no old people were allowed inside, no diseased people were allowed to stay inside so that Buddha could see, and no death. If any death happened, it was hushed up and it was completely covered up by his father. So Buddha was brought up in such opulence, completely away. He was completely kept sheltered from these problems of life. And we actually, if we compare what Buddha's father did, we see that today's modern material world is also actually acting along the same lines. We see that in the modern world, in today's world in Kali Yuga, all these problems of life are being tried to cover up somehow or the other. Now we take the example of death. If we see, especially in Western countries, in developed countries like Australia, US, UK and all, where do we see death happening in front of our eyes? Only if a near and dear one in our family passes away, then we would actually see a dead body. Otherwise, if you ask most of the children around in these developed countries, they would have never seen a dead body. Because all these things are nicely kept covered up. The only occasion when someone would see dead bodies is in a funeral home, when they have gone to attend someone's funeral. And that too, the dead body is so nicely decorated in the funeral home. It is kept inside a very expensive casket and beautiful clothes are put on the dead body. So people don't realize that, oh, death is such a gruesome thing when they see such a nicely decorated dead body in the funeral home. So death is one major problem of life, but it is kept covered in the modern age. People are not allowed to see that, especially in these developed countries. And then if we take disease, even disease, there are such first-class hospitals available to cure diseased people. So we don't see suffering people moving around. Like, you know, especially if you go to countries like India and poor countries like India, Africa and all, you will be able to see all these problems so blatantly in front of our eyes. But in these developed countries, they are completely hushed up. You will never see any suffering people moving around. You will never see any people dying on the streets. We won't see all these things happening. So first-class hospitals are there. They will keep all these diseased persons inside, and you can't see only that this is a big problem of life, disease. And then the third problem, old age. Now for counteracting this problem of life, there are so many old age homes which have been created in these Western countries. In fact, in the newspapers, if you see, there are ads which keep coming of, you know, beautiful residential home for old people. Don't worry about your retirement. Come and stay here. Everything provided. Like, and you actually feel like going and staying. They have created such beautiful old age homes. But what are they actually trying to do? They are actually trying to cover up the problem of old age. Old age is actually a problem, and everyone is going to come into it. And everyone has to face it. But they are trying to make that old age also so enjoyable that people don't realize that very soon they are going to leave the body. And parents, like, you know, when their parents grow old, they are very happy that these old age homes are there. They immediately send off their parents to these old age homes, hardly to visit them. If you ask some of the, you know, carers in our congregation, there are some devotees who are carers for old age people and nurses and all. They say that even when people are in hospital suffering with some disease, or, you know, carers for old age people, you ask them, they say hardly their children visit them. Hardly. It's only during some special festival or if the birthday of some person has come that the children come to visit. That too, for some parents, they are not even lucky to have that. So what to speak of the children? They don't visit, then what to speak of grandchildren? So you see, the children in this Kali Yuga, and especially in developed countries, have not seen old age much, or they haven't seen the suffering which old age people go through. So all these problems are kept nicely covered up. And the same thing Buddha's father did in the kingdom. He completely kept all these problems at bay. He kept Buddha away and sheltered from all these problems of life. So Buddha grew up thinking that life is really nice. Life is all about sensual enjoyment. It is all about just gratifying your senses and to live to the utmost pleasure possible. That is the atmosphere in which Buddha grew up. But one day Buddha wanted to explore, because he was growing big, so he wanted to explore the kingdom. And before he went to explore it, in fact, his father already married him off also at a young age. He had a beautiful wife who was almost like a heavenly goddess. Such a beautiful wife, nicely kept inside the kingdom itself, never subject to the problems of life. But one day Buddha wanted to go out. So he told his charioteer, "You take me beyond the walls of this palace. I want to see the world outside. I want to explore. I want to see what actually goes on in the world." So very much against his father's wishes, Buddha went outside the walls of the palace. And when he went out, he actually started seeing the world for what it was. So when they were going, he saw an old man walking by. And that man was really old. He couldn't even walk properly. He was really struggling to walk with a stick. And that too, he was a poor man, so he was carrying one big burden. For his living, he used to carry big burdens. And Buddha was really moved to see this old man. So he asked his charioteer, he said, "What is this?" And he said, "This is an old man." He said, "But why is he suffering like this? What is this old age?" He said, "Yeah, one day all of us have to grow old. And when we grow old, our body doesn't function properly anymore. And this is what happens to you when you become old." And Buddha was so moved when he saw the plight of this old man. So when they went further, they came across a diseased person. I think it was a leper or someone on the side of the street who was suffering greatly from his disease. And Buddha again asked his charioteer, he said, "What is this?" And he said, "This person has some disease." And Buddha asked, "What is disease?" And then the charioteer explained to him that disease is something which actually comes to anybody. And it doesn't see any age or anything. And this is a fact of life that all of us can get diseased at one stage or the other. And when you get diseased, you have to undergo that suffering. And then they went a bit further. And that time Buddha saw that there was a person who was lying on a stretcher and four people were carrying him and going. And there were so many relatives in front and back who were crying. They were beating their chests and crying loudly. And Buddha, for him, it was a strange scene. He was seeing this for the first time. So he asked the charioteer that, "Why is this person lying and why are people carrying him?" And the charioteer explained to him that actually this is a dead man. He has already left his body and now his relatives are taking him to the crematorium to burn his body. And Buddha was shocked. He said, "What is death? What do you mean by he is no longer there, he has left his body?" So then the charioteer explained. He said, "That is again a fact of life. All of us will have to be subject to this one day. So, and one day you will leave your body, you will be carried on a stretcher by your friends or relatives and this body will be burnt." And then Buddha came back to his palace and after that day Buddha was not the same again. He was deeply contemplative. He started thinking, he went into introspection and he started thinking. He said that, "What is the use of all these pleasures that I have grown up continuously under? And what is the use of so much of sense enjoyment, of so much of sense gratification that I have been doing since my childhood, when I can't solve the four problems of life?" He felt that whatever pleasures are there in this material world, whatever pleasures his father had completely surrounded him with, they were actually a mere distraction. They were just an illusion and they were distracting people from solving the real problems of life and from facing the real problems of life, which is birth, death, old age and disease. So when Buddha, this realization dawned on Buddha that it is no use continuing like this in this kingdom, completely engrossed in sensual pleasures, he said, "I must go out and I must try to see how to solve these problems which people are actually suffering." So in the middle of the night, one day, without telling anyone, Buddha left the kingdom. He left his beautiful wife who was sleeping next to him. And he just left, went to the forest and he gave up his princely robes. He put on the robes of a mendicant and he took a begging bowl in his hand. And he decided that now I'm not going to go back to that kingdom, to that world of sense gratification. I'm going to find out the truth and I'm going to find out what is the solution to the problems of this world. So as he went into the forest, he met some sadhus and these sadhus were doing severe tapasya. They were doing so much austerity, undergoing so much severe austerities, penances, and they were subjecting their body to so much torture, not eating for so many days, not drinking, not sleeping, standing up and doing austerity. So they were torturing their body to have control over their mind and ultimately to attain self-realization. And Buddha also tried this with these sadhus. This was the first set of renunciants he met in his life. So he also tried that for some days. But Buddha was not convinced by this. He felt that too much of torturing the body and almost becoming like a dead man was not going to solve the problem. Because then Buddha saw that by not allowing the body to live, he was not going to be able to attain the wisdom or the enlightenment by which he can solve the problems of life. Or he would not be able to attain self-realization if the body itself was not there. Or the body was so tortured that it can't function properly. So Buddha decided that this is not the path. He wasn't convinced by what the sadhus were doing. And therefore he left their shelter and he walked down to Gaya. And there he sat down under the shade of a Bodhi tree. And he vowed that now I'm not going to leave this place till I have attained enlightenment, till I have realized how to solve and I have found out the way to solve the problems which people are suffering in this world. So Buddha sat down in meditation, and then for many days, you know, we have seen that famous picture of Buddha where he's sitting in meditation under the Bodhi tree. So he sat down in meditation under this Bodhi tree, and for many days he kept meditating. And after a few days, he achieved what is called as enlightenment. And because he achieved enlightenment under that Bodhi tree, that therefore his name came to be known as Buddha. Buddha means one who is enlightened, or Buddha also means one who has a lot of spiritual intelligence. So he achieved that enlightenment under the tree, and he realized what he has to preach to people, what is the philosophy that he would like to preach to people. And then he started his mission of spreading the Buddhist philosophy in the world. So what philosophy Buddha realized, or what enlightenment he realized and which he wanted to tell people, was that it is better to adopt a middle way. That is what is the essence of Buddhist philosophy. That not too much of sense gratification, because that is what Buddha's father made him do throughout his life in his young age. And not too much of renunciation, which he realized when he met those sadhus, that how it was not useful torturing the body like this. And it did not lead him to self-realization, completely doing austerities and not allowing the body to even function properly. So he said not too much sensual enjoyment and not too much renunciation, but there is a middle path which we have to follow. And that is the path which he started preaching to his people. So the philosophy of Buddhism is that Buddha preached the four noble truths. The first noble truth that Buddha preached was that dukkha or suffering is a fact of life. He said that real problem of life is suffering. In the material world, as long as we are there, there is going to be suffering. That was the first noble truth which Buddha preached. Then the second noble truth which Buddha preached was that why is there suffering? Okay, we accept that real problem of life is suffering, but why is there suffering in this world? Or why are we suffering? And Buddha told people that we are suffering because we have desires and longings in our heart. Because we have unlimited desires, we have unlimited tendencies to enjoy this material world. We have unlimited longings and cravings to have more and more and more in our life. This is what ultimately brings suffering in our life. And these longings and desires in turn lead to attachment. And this philosophy is there also in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna explains to Arjuna in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So when you have desire in the heart, it will lead to attachment. And obviously from attachment, there will be frustration. And then there will be again suffering because of those frustrations. So this vicious cycle will go on and on. That is what Buddha explained. That suffering is a fact of life. And why we are suffering? Because we have desires and longings in our heart, which lead to attachment. That attachment ultimately leads to frustration, and which again ultimately leads to suffering. So that is a vicious cycle, and to come out of the vicious cycle is actually true knowledge, or is the real purpose of life. That was the second noble truth. Then the third noble truth which Buddha taught was that as soon as this attachment ends, suffering will end in your life. So don't keep being attached. Don't have these cravings or these desires in your heart. End all these attachment and highlight the desires in your heart. And as soon as you are able to do that, the suffering in your life will stop. That was the third noble truth. In fact, Rasavilasani Mataji, we do the Bhakti Vaibhav course together, and she always quotes this by one of the great acharyas. She says that there is no pain like attachment in this world, and there is no pleasure like detachment in this world. So the same philosophy Buddha was teaching. The third noble truth, that as soon as you end your attachments, as soon as you annihilate your desires in the heart, the suffering in your life will end. So that was the third noble truth. And the fourth noble truth was that, having understood these three noble truths, you follow the middle path, or you follow the eightfold path which Buddha taught. And what was that eightfold path he taught? He said that there should be right understanding in your heart, right intent, right speech, right actions, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So this was the eightfold path that Buddha taught. He said that by following this eightfold path, you will be able to annihilate the desires in your heart, by which attachment will go, and you will be able to end the suffering in your life. And once you are able to reach that stage by following this Eightfold Path, one will attain what is called as Nirvana. Nirvana or Shunyavadi. That is the philosophy or that is the teachings which Buddha came to give. Nirvana means you will attain a state in life where you will no longer have any desires in your heart. And you will not be subject to the demands of this body, or you will not be attracted to the pleasures of this world. And you will come to what is called as voidism. No desires. No. Like that is what Buddha came to teach. So this is the essence of the Buddhist philosophy. That have a middle way. Follow the Four Noble Truths by following the Eightfold Path which Buddha came to teach. And Prabhupada also explains, and Srimad Bhagavatam also explains, again in the first canto, third chapter, where the Leela avatars are explained, that Buddha in this Kali Yuga came to stop animal killing as well. So when Buddha started preaching about this eightfold understanding and about the Four Noble Truths, he started walking throughout the India and he started preaching his philosophy. But he also observed that during his time, there were many Brahmins Brahmins are actually the heads of society. So there were many Brahmins who were misusing the Vedas. So these Brahmins had literally opened slaughterhouses in the name of the Vedas. Because they were telling the people, we have to sacrifice animals in the name. It is given in the Vedas. So please bring animals. We will sacrifice them. And that way we will be able to achieve self-realization. So this is what the Brahmins were doing. But they had become addicted to eating the flesh of animals. So Prabhupada explains that they were just maintaining slaughterhouses in the name of Vedas. They used to encourage people, bring animals, but they were actually selling that flesh to other people and they were eating it themselves also. And Buddha saw that this rampant animal killing has started. And when he spoke to these Brahmins, they were all claiming that it is given in the Vedas. So he realized that they are doing this in the name of the Vedas. They are completely misrepresenting or misunderstanding the Vedas. So Buddha realized that just telling them the highest truth or the highest philosophy is not going to help. First I will have to renounce or I will have to tell them that the Vedas don't exist. And then only I'll be able to stop this animal killing. So Buddha went and started preaching against the Vedas. Now it was really surprising. Lord Buddha is actually Krishna. He's an incarnation of Krishna. And Vedeshcha Sarvayar Aham Eva Vedyo. That by the Vedas, the Lord is to be known. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita. But the same Krishna, when he came as Buddha, he is telling people not to follow the Vedas. And the purpose was that, so that people will stop animal killing, which they were doing in the name of the Vedas. So this is what Buddha started preaching. He said, completely stop following these Vedas and stop following God as well, but only follow me. That is what Buddha preached. And therefore it is said in this verse also, that he came to trick the atheistic class of men. So when he is telling these people, don't follow the Vedas and don't follow God, but follow me. So what does it mean? He is actually the Lord. So he is tricking the people into following the Lord by preaching that don't follow God. Because they wouldn't have understood if he would have preached the highest essence of the Vedas. They were so much deeply entrenched into animal cleaning and fresh eating. So he came and he greatly succeeded in stopping this animal killing. And Prabhupada explains, therefore we see that India is mostly a vegetarian country today. Most of the Indians are vegetarians. Although now again the trend is changing because it's Kali Yuga and India is also catching up with the Western world. But he said that the credit goes to Lord Buddha that most of India is a vegetarian country. It's because Buddha drove away animal killing from the country. But we say that today also, it's even though India is such a pious land, there is still so much animal killing going on. In fact, I was reading in the news that India is the second largest exporter of beef in the world. So, you know, we are known for the protection of cows. India is called as the land of cows. But India is the second largest exporter of beef in the world. There was a quote which George Bernard Shaw had said during the World War II. So that during the World War II, there was so much of shedding of blood going on. So many soldiers were being killed in the war front. So there were many Christians who had become very God conscious and they were going and praying in the churches. And this George Bernard Shaw was telling he was giving a message to the Christians. He was telling, my dear fellow Christians, you are going every day in the morning to pray to the Lord so that this bloodshed would stop. And so that all your sons and children who are in the war would return back safely. But when you go back home, You are gorging on the dead bodies of animals. And can't you see the connection? George Bernard Shaw was saying, you are shedding so much blood just to satisfy your tongue. You are eating so much flesh of dead animals. But you are not realizing that that is the connection why there is so much bloodshed on the war front. So we see there was so much of animal killing during Buddha's time, and therefore he came to stop all this. But now again, it's coming up because of Kali Yuga progressing. So Buddha always said that there is no question of purification unless one stops eating flesh, unless one comes to that human platform of life where he is not eating any animal meat. And then only there is some question or there is some chance of purification of the heart which can happen. We see that the Buddhist philosophy, we may sometimes wonder that, you know, Buddha was Krishna himself. But why did he do this? Why did he reject the Vedas? Why did he reject God? Why did he completely teach that there is no God? It was almost atheism. But we realize that the purpose was that there was so much misrepresentation of Vedas that people would not have understood if he would have kept the Vedas and taught them the highest principle. So every incarnation which comes is actually preaching according to time, place and circumstance. And during Buddha's time, this was the circumstance. And he had to preach to people who were so fallen and who had become so atheistic. So Buddha, we see that he taught actually common sense religious principles, as Prabhupada also said in this purport. He came to preach actually what is called as Upadharma. He did not teach the highest dharma. The highest dharma has been mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Savai pumsam paro dharmo yatho bhakti radokshaje ahai tuki aha pratihata yayatma suprasidati. Savai pumsam paro dharmo. Paro dharmo means the highest religion is yatho bhakti radokshaje. Bhakti unto adokshaja or bhakti unto Lord Krishna. So that is the highest religion. But Buddha did not preach that. Buddha was preaching ahimsa. Ahimsa paramo dharmo. Buddha was preaching that paramo dharmo is ahimsa. So he was just doing that because of time, place and circumstance. So we see that Buddhism is not actually a religion. It is just a way of life. Buddha came to preach ahimsa. Buddha came to preach the middle path. That means follow a good moral life. Don't kill animals and lead a good moral life. Don't follow the Vedas because people will again misuse the Vedas and kill animals. Don't follow the Vedas but follow me. This was the essence of the Buddhism philosophy or what Buddha came to preach. So after preaching this, Buddha went back to the spiritual world. He established his philosophy of ahimsa, ahimsa paramo dharmo, and follow the middle path and follow those eightfold path which he came to preach, lead a good moral life and all that. And after Buddha left, then the Lord again realized that he has to do something because Vedas had been wiped out completely from people's lives. So the Lord sent his own dear devotee, his own servant, Lord Shiva or Lord Shankar, back as Shankaracharya into this world. And the purpose of Shankaracharya coming was to re-establish the Vedic principles. He saw, when Shankaracharya appeared in this world, he saw that Buddhism was completely prevalent in India at that time. And people had become completely against the Vedas. There was no Vedic principles being followed. There were no Vedas only prevalent when Shankaracharya appeared. So Shankaracharya had come with that purpose, just to re-establish the Vedas. But again, according to the time, place and circumstance, Shankaracharya saw that people were completely into voidism. Shunyavadi. Like, you know, in Prabhupada Pranati Mantra also it is there. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. He saw that people were into Shunyavad. They were not following the Vedas. They were not following any God. So Shankaracharya obviously could not immediately preach personalism to such class of people who had no faith in the Vedas and who had no faith in God. So he knew that if he teaches this directly personal aspect of the Lord, that will not be accepted by people. So then Shankaracharya therefore taught what is actually just covered Buddhism. He taught about the impersonal nature of Lord. He taught about Brahman. And Prabhupada says that it is actually not much different. Shankaracharya's philosophy is not much different than Buddhism. Buddhism was Shunyavadi, which is voidism. And Shankaracharya is Nirvishesha. Nirvishesha means impersonalism. So Prabhupada says that there is not much difference. In fact, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, who is Prabhupada's disciple, he has done a lot of research in this. And he said that Brahman, like, you know, Shankaracharya was preaching that Brahman is ultimate. So he said that Brahman is actually an intellectual clone of Buddhism or Buddhist voidism. And Shankaracharya did this just to bring the Vedas back into the world. So he also preached almost covered Buddhism, but he did this on the strength of the Vedas. He re-established Vedic principles. He brought back Vedic culture to India. And Shankaracharya, it is mentioned, if we read the life of Shankaracharya, he preached so fiercely that he drove Buddhism almost out of India. So we see towards, he drove it towards the east out, and we see Buddhism is so much prevalent in Myanmar, Tibet, Thailand, all these countries. He drove it out of the north, and therefore we see it's prevalent in Tibet, Nepal, and then he drove it towards the south. So there is so much Buddhism in Sri Lanka also. So he drove it out of India. Although Buddha was born in India, in Gaya, and Buddhism started in India, but now there is Buddhism not much prevalent. It is more prevalent in all these other countries. And this was all due to Shankaracharya, because he wanted to re-establish Vedas. He did not want the Vedic culture of India to be lost. And therefore he preached fiercely and he drove Buddhism out of the country. And then it's said, after Shankaracharya had done this work, it set the platform for great acharyas like Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya to appear, who could then again build on this. Whatever Shankaracharya had at least brought the Vedas back into the world or into India. And then based on that, Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya then preached personal aspect of God, or they preach personalism to the world. So, and then later on, after these two acharyas went, then the Lord himself came back as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came to preach the highest essence or the highest philosophy, which is love of Godhead. And he gave this process, he gave this philosophy. He said it is very easy to achieve the highest essence of Vedic principles through the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's the same Krishna who came as Buddha, completely rejected the Vedas, and then he again sent Shankaracharya to re-establish the Vedas, sent his representatives, great acharyas like Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, to re-establish personalism. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. Not only to teach us about personalism, but also to give the highest philosophy, love of Godhead through the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And we see there is actually a wonderful connection between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Buddha. So we see Lord Buddha, after he was not convinced by those sadhus he met in the forest, he actually went to Gaya. And he sat under the Bodhi tree, and the enlightenment by Buddha was achieved in Gaya. And Gaya was the place from where Buddha actually started his preaching movement of teaching Buddhist philosophy to the world. And we see in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life also, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu throughout his childhood, he was a logician, he was a great pandit, he was Nimai Pandit at that time, completely away from devotional activities, completely away from God consciousness. But as soon as he went to Gaya to perform the last rites for his father, he met his spiritual master Ishwarapuri in Gaya. And over there, the transformation of heart, sort of like the Lord's heart does not need to be transformed, but transformation in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came actually in Gaya. So we see this connection that Buddhism also started in Gaya. Lord Buddha got his enlightenment in Gaya under the Bodhi tree. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also got, you know, he became a devotee. He started manifesting the symptoms or the purpose for which he had come also in Gaya when he met his spiritual master after he had done the last rites for his father. So this is the wonderful connection between the two avatars, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as well as Buddha, that they both started their philosophy in Gaya. They both started their exhibiting the true purpose of their incarnation in Gaya. So we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also actually is preaching the same thing as Buddhism. If we compare the philosophies, Buddhism is saying there should be no material desires in the heart so that the heart becomes pure and lead a good life. And same thing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, all the scriptures are teaching the same thing. But the difference is that Buddhism is teaching the negative aspect, or it is stopping only at that aspect. That let there be, annihilate all material desires. There should be cessation. There should be no more longings in your heart. Completely cut off all these attachments and come to that platform of nirvana or shunyavad. That is what Buddhism is teaching. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita are also teaching the same thing. No material desires in the heart. Material desires or pursuing sense gratification and spiritual advancement go ill together. This is what Srimad Bhagavatam is also preaching. In fact, Rishabhdev has told his sons, Rishabhdev is none other than Lord Krishna. So he has told his sons in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Nayam deho deho bhujam na loke, kashtan kaman arhate vid bhujam ye. Katapo divyam, putraka yena sattvam, shudye dhyasmad brahma saukhyam twanantam. So tapo divyam, putraka yena sattvam. This is what Rishabhdev is also telling his sons. He is saying, the meaning of the verse is that one who has attained this human form of life, out of so many species of life, 8.4 million species of life, and this human life is so rare. So one who has attained this human form of life, he should not work just for his sense gratification or just to satisfy his senses or give pleasure to his senses. And he should not work hard day and night for this sense gratification, which is even available to the dogs and the hog who eats stool. The sense gratification, when the hog is eating stool, he is feeling so much of enjoyment. Prabhupada used to give this example in the early days in New York. He used to say that if you give a plate of stool to a hog and you give nice halwa, the hog is going to run towards the stool. Because for the hog, the enjoyment is in eating that stool. It is not in eating that halwa. So Rishabhdev is telling his sons that this sense gratification is available even to the dogs and hogs. Why waste this human form of life in working so hard to achieve this sense gratification? What is important for human form of life is to engage in penance and austerities. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam. Tapo divyam, engage in austerities, but not just simple austerities, or not just austerities like the sadhus whom Buddha met were doing, completely torturing the body, but tapo divyam, austerities for the pleasure of the Lord. So that your heart gets purified and one day you can get love of Krishna by, you know, purification of the heart and not pursuing material desires in the heart. So we see the teachings are almost the same. Buddha also said annihilate material desires in your heart, and Bhagavatam is also saying the same thing. Tapo divyam, annihilate material desires. Don't pursue the path of sense gratification. Otherwise spiritual realization is very difficult. But the difference is that the philosophy of Vaishnavism or Bhagavatam is giving us the positive of this philosophy. That means not just cessation of material desires, but positive engagement of the senses in the service of the Lord. Positive engagement of the body, mind and words in serving Krishna and in serving his devotees. That is what the Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching, and that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach us. And if we take the example of the gopis, now we see gopis are gopi bhartur padakamalayor das das dasanudas. That is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu preached. The highest essence is to become the servant of the servant of the servant of the gopis, who are the topmost devotees of the Lord. So we see gopis, they were completely materially desireless. No material desires at all in their heart, like Buddha was preaching. But they were full of spiritual desires. So it was not that their heart was shunyavadi, it was empty, or there was zero in the heart. Their heart is full of material, of spiritual desires. But all these desires are only for the pleasure of Krishna. That is the difference. So we see the example of gopis. We see how Vaishnavism is such a positive philosophy. No material desires, which is same as Buddhism. But the heart is full of spiritual desires. Desires to serve the Lord, desires to serve his devotees. That is what the gopis are also teaching by their example. So we see that Buddhism and Vaishnavism have all these similarities. And we see that Buddha was, although the Lord himself, he came to preach against the Vedas, which the Lord himself has established. You know, in the first beginning of the creation, the Vedas were imparted by Krishna unto the heart. Tena Brahma Hridaya Kavaya. Into the heart of Lord Brahma, the Vedas were imparted. So the Vedas have come, they are aparusheya. They have come directly from the Supreme Lord. But the same Lord came as Buddha, and he rejected the Vedas only because he wanted to bring these atheistic class of men towards following him. So he tricked these people into following him by making them reject the Vedas and by making them reject God. So as Vaishnavas, we understand the purpose of Lord Buddha's incarnation, and we do accept Lord Buddha, although we know what his teachings are. So we do accept Buddha because he is an incarnation of Krishna and we do worship him. But we have the correct understanding of his teachings and of the purpose of his incarnation in this world. So his purpose was only to reject the Vedas, only to stop animal killing, because of which he rejected the Vedas. And his purpose was to teach how to annihilate material desires, how to stop suffering in this world by following the Eightfold Path and by following the middle way. That is the essence of the Buddhist teachings, and that is why Buddha had appeared in this Kali Yuga. So we'll stop here and we'll ask if there are any questions or comments.
Lord Buddha, he was preaching, he was able to greatly stop the animal slaughter. Of course, we understand he's God and he's all powerful. He's able to do something like that. But we see in the modern world, although we have this kind of movement there, and we're trying to preach against these sinful activities like meat eating, intoxication, etc. And although we see maybe there's a rise in vegetarianism, we don't seem to see that any slaughterhouses are closing down. We seem to see that rampant meat eating and billions of animals are still getting killed, and rampant intoxication, illicit sex, etc. It doesn't seem like we're really having an effect. And although we're backed by Krishna, the slaughter is Sankatan Mila. So why is this, and what can we do about it to bring down this rampant activity of animal slaughter?
Roji, you are such an elevated Vaishnava, you can answer your own question, Roji.
My understanding would be that just preach more vigorously, more Harinam Sankirtan, the Shiva talks, more Prasadam distribution. These are the most powerful things to bring down these simple activities. So if we see that we're not really having an impact on changing people's lives, steering them away from these simple activities, is because we're not preaching vigorously enough.
That's very correct. And what I also feel, and from what I've heard to Prabhupada's lectures and reading his transcripts, is Prabhupada also said that the purpose of our movement, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, is not just, these four principles, preaching about these four principles. Our purpose is not just to stop animal killing, or our purpose is not just to promote vegetarianism. That is like a byproduct of what is the main purpose of our mission. So the main purpose of our mission is actually love of Godhead. So our main mission is Harinam Sankirtanam and Prasadam distribution. So Prabhupada's philosophy was that if we do more of these activities, concentrate on the core, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to spread, the holy name of Hare Krishna Mahamantra, then the purification of heart will happen because of chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So we are not trying to externally stop these activities like Buddha did. Obviously, it was according to time, place, circumstance. But he was externally stopping the activity of animal killing by rejecting the Vedas. But Prabhupada's and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is actually more internal. It is more about transformation of the heart. So the more Harinam we do, the more Hare Krishna Mahamantra we spread, and the more Prasadam distribution we do, that will internally purify the heart, and which will in turn lead to people giving up all these sinful activities. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement was to concentrate on the core, purify the heart through the Hare Krishna Mahamantra and through Prasadam distribution, but we are not outwardly, we are not like those PETA and those vegan societies and all that who are just into, because externally, people may give up. And I've read so many cases, because I also subscribe to that. There is some website in Australia which they keep sending emails about. I've subscribed to that to support that Animals. I think Animals Australia or something like that it's called. And there are many stories we read about these people. People get inspired, especially children sometimes. They show these videos about meat eating, and they show how gruesome it is, how the meat has come to your plate, what happens behind slaughterhouses. And, people get inspired and they give up for some time. But because the taste is still there in the tongue, and because there is no transformation of the heart which has happened, they again take up these activities later in their life. We come across many people who say, I was a vegetarian for some time. And then they go back to meat eating. It's because there is nothing, no change of heart that has happened. Externally cutting off, preventing the senses from doing something will work just for some time. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission is to actually internally purify so that the senses are not attracted, and the senses are attracted more to Prasadam eating. So That is my realization.
So also you say, does that mean you've got the higher taste?
The higher taste, exactly.
Yeah. The taste is not out as well. When you eat the shard, the taste is so far out as well. It's in the spiritual world, and it's like, how can you go back to me when you eat that shard?
Yes. You had a point?
So it is the Lord's design that animal killing will happen. So it is just happening because the Lord designed Kali Yuga to be as such. So it is, in that sense, it may be utopian thinking to think that we can change what the Lord has ordained for Kali Yuga.
It is not a failure on our part.
Yeah, it may not be a failure on our part not to be able to curtail animal slaughter. What we are doing, in my view, is to follow the instructions of Srila Prabhupada in terms of giving the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, the higher place, to mankind, and thereby altering their free will to commit sin. But otherwise, material nature is going to continue tormenting in Kali Yuga. The nature of material nature cannot be stopped. We can only take part in serving the Lord, in reforming souls and uniting the jivas with Bhagavan and service. But we can't change the design of the Lord. That's my question.
Thank you. Yes, Madhini?
I get the impression of all made it and no one is at fault. Because God has created it. But I want to say that Kali Yuga is designed to facilitate the souls who have really low past desires. Krishna has made this universe so we can experience whatever we want to experience. And in this material world, people they have living entities, they have really low desires. So when Krishna will allow them to get satisfied, it's okay with them? No. Because the conditions are not allowing for them to give the living entities, they want to be in something to gain, they have low desires. They will appear in Kali Yuga. So when we mentioned kind of that God designed, I had the impression that God is to blame the non-living entities. But it is Kali Yuga is done because of the low desires of the living entities. And Krishna gave them this facility in Kali Yuga. So just to say something in regards to Krishna, you know, he's not kind of guilty because he designed it.
I think what we are saying here is the Bhagavatam has predicted anyway that Kali Yuga is going to be like that. And it's a vicious cycle. We see that people are killing so many animals, and obviously it's said in the Bhagavatam that you have to be born again as that animal to suffer what you give. So it's a vicious cycle right now going on in Kali Yuga. People kill animals, they are again born as those animals who will have to suffer. So there have to be people who will kill them again.
So it's
like, yeah.
Stop the check. I mean, they'll totally stop animal slaughter, but through the spreading of the same time over, it can be greatly reduced.
Yes, it can be greatly reduced, very true. Any other questions or comments? Yes,
with Buddha, you were explaining that he was in Gaya and he was meditating to become enlightened. So two questions. What was he meditating on? And the second question is, he's Krishna, why does he meditate? Well, why does he need to meditate? He's already enlightened, I'm receiving. Okay. So that's my two questions.
So we see whenever the Lord appears, there is a purpose behind his appearance. Now, for example, if we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life also, we know that he is Krishna, although he is Channa Avatar, we know that he is Krishna. Then we see he used to shed tears and he used to cry in separation from Krishna. And you know, if we see, that is the Leela of the Lord, because he came in the form of a devotee. So obviously he is going to manifest those symptoms. We can say, how can he cry like that when he is himself the Lord? How can he cry on himself? So, but he came in the form of a devotee, so he was playing the role of a devotee. In the same way, Buddha came with a purpose to show people that if you meditate, then you attain enlightenment and you can get, you know, this whatever philosophy he got, you can get that understanding how material desires are futile and how you have to bring cessation to your attachment so that you can come out of the suffering of life. So, as I mentioned in my lecture before, he had come to set, always the Lord shows by his own example. So he was showing by his own example that how meditation is important. Obviously, he does not need to meditate on anything because he is the Lord. But he was showing an example by sitting down under the tree and meditating, showing that whatever sadhus taught him, that too much austerity is also not good. There also he tried with those sadhus. But you know, that path is not very good for human beings. And also too much sense pleasure, which he did in his young days, are not good. So I believe that he is setting an example by sitting down and meditating so that people will also follow him. Because he said, reject the Vedas, reject God, but you follow me. So that people will rise at least to that platform of following him, meditating, trying to achieve that self-realization within their heart, that material desires are futile, and stopping animal killing in that way. I feel he was setting an example by doing that, meditating on himself. Yes. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yeah.
Mahaprabhu is, you said this, Buddha, when he was trying to do the severe austerity, and he realized it is not a part. Now my question is, if you see Bhagavad Gita, there is a picture that you see the saints, they go for severe austerity, and they get the same realization through this, what the Buddha got.
Because he had come to preach the middle path. Buddha had come to preach the middle path. He realized that people were so much steeped into animal killing. When Buddha came, there was so much of animal killing. People had gone so much in the mode of ignorance. If we see the pictures in the Bhagavad Gita, and you know, we see that pictures, when they show those pictures of sages doing austerity, those are sages already who are very highly elevated consciousness. So they are actually Ashtanga yogis. They have already a very highly elevated consciousness, and therefore they are able to sustain those austerities which they are doing. But Buddha had come to preach to a class of men who were already faithless and atheistic, and who were so much into meat eating and animal killing. So he knew that for such people, to take them into a forest and make them do that high level of austerities is not going to be possible. They might not be able to sustain that penances on their body. And therefore he had to show the middle path, that at least lead a good moral life, no need to completely do sense gratification like the people were doing when Buddha appeared, and no need to completely do the austerities, which they would not have been capable of doing, because directly from the mode of ignorance, your body will not be able to sustain those austerities. The sages are all in the more highly on the mode of goodness platform, and therefore they are able to sustain those austerities. Otherwise you won't be able to. From meat eating, directly fasting, it's like that. So it wouldn't have been possible for those people. So therefore Buddha showed that middle path. He had come to preach to that class of men, and therefore his philosophy and his teachings were according to what that class of men would accept. That is my understanding. For Buddha? No, he did not do severe austerities. He rejected that path of severe austerities. He sat and meditated under the tree and he got enlightenment, it is said. So obviously we know he is Lord Krishna only. So there is no one who appeared in front of him. But he got enlightenment from inside.
Is it wrong to say, I usually say, oh no, it's a lifestyle, you know, it's a way of living.
So what are you asking is that, is it wrong to say that Hare Krishna is a religion, is not a religion? It's a way of life. No, I don't believe it is wrong to say. Prabhupada said whatever is required to be done to bring a soul back to Krishna consciousness. In fact, in the early days, Prabhupada, when people used to go out on book distribution, Prabhupada was encouraging people go even in Western clothes and do book distribution, just so that, you know, people are more receptive to when you are distributing books. So whatever is required, and there is nothing wrong when we are saying that Krishna consciousness is not a religion, because it is actually not. It's not a sectarian religion. We know that. So it is actually a way of life. It is for the spirit soul to go back to its original position, to come back to its original position. So there is nothing wrong in saying that. That is what is my understanding. Because Krishna consciousness means we are teaching them the way of life, how they can reform their ways through the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, how they can regain their original lost identity, which is that they are a spirit soul and they are a servant of Krishna. So we are actually teaching them a way of life. We see that our lives are so differently formed than their lives. We are not into what mainstream... Prabhupada says, even though devotees may appear to be doing the same activities as a karmi, but the consciousness, the change is completely different. They know that they are doing it for a higher purpose. So we are actually teaching them that when they come into the Krishna consciousness movement. So I don't see any harm in saying that it is a way of life. Want to try something again? When we say we are not religion, we are not a sectarian religion. That is what is meant. Because Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita introduction, actually, if you see, that Krishna consciousness is Sanatana Dharma, which is the eternal constituency of a living entity. And he explains that with the example of sugar. So he says that just as the nature of sugar is sweetness, or the nature of water is liquidity or wetness. So he said, similarly, the nature of the spirit soul is that he is a servant of Krishna. So he said that Sanatana Dharma or Krishna consciousness is actually what we are telling them, that, you know, what is your eternal nature, or what is your true this thing. So Prabhupada says in the introduction that we are not a sectarian religion, but it is to teach people the highest, like what they really are. That is what we are teaching people. That is a very good point. to tell people. It's a moment is a science of self-realization. I think we should end now. It's already 9 o'clock. Thank you so much. Granthraj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.